Hello, my name is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, and in all your ways acknowledge Him. Then He's the one who directs your paths. That's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, and this program's about those scriptures. The very opposite of those scriptures is trusting in man or trusting in yourself and leaning to your own understanding. And in all your ways, you simply acknowledge yourself or mankind, and therein it is man who directs your steps. And we certainly see that happening today in our culture, known as humanism or globalism. The process I explain in this program is what I call diaprax. It's simply two words, the dialectic process and praxis. I encourage you to get on my website, authorityresearch.com, as we go into the subject. First of all, the dialectic is noted for three words. Although Hegel, he's the man you most commonly think about when you hear the dialectic being mentioned, he didn't use these words. It was Fichte that he used the most often, and they've been certainly used over the years. Three words, one word, thesis, which is simply position. Antithesis, which would be an opposing position, and synthesis, the merging of those two positions. The formula would be A plus negative A equaling A. Now, that's sort of hard to comprehend because anybody who's taken math knows that if you add one positive 1 to a negative 1, you end up with a 0. You don't end up with a positive 1. But in the dialectic, it's not dealing with reality as far as truth and facts are concerned. It's actually dealing with putting aside anything that interferes with human relationship. In other words, anything extrinsic or external to that feeling that we have for mankind. Now, when God formed man from the dust of the ground, he breathed the breath of life into the nostrils of man. He became a living soul. And so, therefore, man is accountable before God. But God also said that it's not good that man be alone. And that, therefore, there is a relationship factor that every one of us has in our lives. It is very important for us to have somebody that we can turn to for help. That was the helpmeet that God created for Adam. And so we have within us this very dynamic structure that can draw us away from obedience to God. We're formed from the dust of the ground, but we also, God breathed the breath of life into the nostrils of man, and therein we have a soul that's eternal. And that soul is accountable before God. Now the flesh, you know, will return back to the earth. Flesh and blood will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the dialectic does not recognize, cannot recognize, any authority higher than that which is common to mankind. Now, what is common to mankind is by perception. Now, the true science is perception. It has to be observable and repeatable. And so you see a pattern. Anytime you take a science class, you're going to learn formulas and laws. And these were laws that always existed, but man was able, through scientific methods, to identify these laws, and once you find these laws of science, then you can apply them, and that's called technology. Now, if we apply this scientific method to man, all we're going to find is the flesh, that which God formed from the dust of the ground. We're going to find behavior with mankind that always ties him to the creation, you know, all that's of the world. And what do we find? Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. If you want to unite man, if you want to find what's common with every soul on the face of the earth, what you have in common with the billions of people walking on this earth at this moment is lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Yes, every man also has a soul, but not all men look to higher authority. There is a sense of looking to higher authority, but it is not truly God. It is God himself who must reveal himself to us through his word. And it, apart from his word, we cannot know him. We can know there is a God. And that's the frustration of man, because it is man's effort to try to find identity. And that is the relationship factor. You find your identity within yourself first. You try that, by the way, you'll go nuts, because there is no identity in self. And so you look to someone or something outside of yourself, And it could be the parent to begin with. And so you attach yourself, you find your identity within that object. It's called objective truth, that truth that is external to your life experience. Now, that comes to play when you internally, following your natural inclination, following your flesh, you know, God didn't say that having pleasure is bad. He said it's the love of pleasure. Having money is not bad. It's the love of money. And so, say the child is enjoying himself, and there would be nothing wrong with that, except the parent comes in and sees this behavior as inappropriate, and the parent says to the child, you cannot do that. Now, the laws mean nothing unless there's force. And so the parent can be the author of that law, but he also is the authority. And because he's the authority, then he can use force to interfere with that child relating to his sensuous worldly nature, following his natural inclination. And therein he comes to identify objective truth, truth that is external to his own sensuousness. Now, I talk about in programs the dopamine, which is a chemical our body naturally produces. Anytime you touch or smell or taste or look at something or hear something that is pleasurable, more than likely a chemical your body produces called a neurotransmitter called dopamine is released or emancipated in a gap between the nerves called a synaptic gap. And it is in this synaptic gap that this chemical messenger travels across and hits a receptor and then sends the message or the impulse onto the brain. And that same scenario is followed in the brain. All the nerves that you have, a billion of them, they have some of them have up to 10,000 dendrites, which means they simply are connecting with 10,000 other nerves. And somewhere in that dendrite or that synaptic gap, the connection between the chemical connection or space between the nerves, information is stored. And as it's being stored for the first time, dopamine is secreted based upon whether it's an experience of pleasure. Now, you don't really know whether it's pleasurable, for the most part, as a child, until your brain tells you that. In other words, there are nerves and chemicals that are specifically related to pleasure. There are also nerves that are directly related to pain. In other words, you hit a sliver or something, and there are specific nerves that pick up that this is not a good thing, gets to your brain, and then there is adrenaline and different chemicals that are released. And then it's called fight or flight. You either fight whatever it is in the environment that stimulated your mind to become aware of pain, or you flee from it, you try to get away from it. And the objective then is to either remove whatever's causing pain so you can get back to pleasure. And so it is our nature, our carnal, temporal nature, to approach pleasure and to avoid pain. Now God put these in us so that we would enjoy his creation, take pleasure in it. But we find in the garden, when God put Adam and Eve there, he gave Adam a command, thou shalt not eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now we know from observation, we see later in Genesis 3, where Eve is using perception. Remember, true science has to be by perception. She's doing true science. And she observes that the tree of knowledge of good and evil was just like the other trees. They were all in common. They were all good for food. They were all pleasing to the eyes, which, according to man, would be good. You know, if these trees are good, and this other tree is just like these trees, and therefore, logic would tell you that this tree is good as well. And so, by sense perception, she is discovering for herself, by her leaning to her own understanding, that the tree that God said they could not eat of, and he said if you did, you would die, was not a bad tree. And therefore, the logic follows that you could justify eating of the fruit, because if all the other trees were just like this tree, and this tree was just like all the other trees, and you could eat it from all the other trees, why can't you eat of this tree? And so therein, through logic, through science, she found that whatever formula temporally, naturally applied to the other trees applied directly to this tree. But there was a significant difference only in the third, is that this tree was desirous to make one wise. And that understanding is that, now, this is a tree that God said, and God is wise, see, this is my tree. And so therefore, if I can be like God, he's wise, I can be wise. And notice all three steps, food, good for food, pleasing the eyes, desires to make one wise, were all good. So the logic would say, why would there be anything wrong with this tree? I am therefore justified in eating of the tree. Now, there were a sequence of events that took place for that to happen. First of all, Eve was drawn away to that tree, because we know when she responds to Satan, for God has said, thou shalt not eat of it, nor touch it. The nor touching was her sensuous desire, there's the dopamine, to at least relate with the tree in some fashion. Every time she's going by this forbidden tree, now God put it in the middle of the garden. She has a sensuous response. There's her body has a sensuous need. It stimulates dopamine. Anytime you come into an environment that there is pleasure, your body picks that up. Even by the time it gets to your mind, then you have to decide. You know, you have to set your mind on things above or on things on the earth. Now, if you set your mind on the things of the earth, whatever stimulated the dopamine, the pleasure, and then in your mind, your awareness is heightened, your memory is activated, and your muscles are activated, all to go in the direction of whatever produced the pleasure in the environment I want to associate with, I want to relate with. And the purpose for that is to get more dopamine. See, and I've said this over and over, it's really simple, is that whenever you give a child a toy, when he plays with that toy, he's not in love with the toy. He's in love with the dopamine the toy stimulates. And this is where there's nothing wrong with pleasure, because if you give that child a toy, you're doing it so he would enjoy his day. If you don't have any dopamine flowing in here, you're depressing. Nobody wants to hang around with you. You don't even want to hang around with yourself. And so you give a child a toy, and then you tell him to put it up. Now, when he doesn't put it up, now you know we have lust of the flesh. In other words, the pleasure he's getting from the toy is now more important than the command that prevents him from experiencing relationship with something in the environment. You know, right now I'm explaining humanism. This is the very core, the very essence of humanism. This is the very essence of the New World Order, of globalism, of communism, of socialism. This is the dynamo that makes the whole thing work. Without it, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't exist. It would be illogical or unreasonable to mankind. But because our body is stimulated by the environment in regards to pleasure, and then our mind looks into the environment to find out, first of all, what created this sensation? I like it. I want more. Or maybe I can continue it, or I can create it myself. I can use my imagination. I've had enough experiences of pleasure, and therefore I can create my own little world, and then I can try to apply whatever I imagine in your mind and do social engineering and create the reality of the world external to my mind. This is the imagination of the heart. See, we are to trust in the Lord with our heart, because the heart is deceitful above all things. Notice that Satan deceived Eve, and how he did that was he found that part of her life that was attracted to what she was forbidden to from relating with. God said, don't eat of this tree. And that's an act of relationship. And so her response when Satan set her up with a neurolinguistic sentence structure, which is an embedded statement in a question, and it's to elicit your sensuous desire, your sensuous need to relate with something in the environment that produced pleasure. Now, whether that's good or bad, it's just pleasure. And so when Eve's response is not the Word of God, she doesn't share the text, because the Holy Spirit, see, God is spirit, and he created the world as a spirit. He created that which is a flesh of the material world. And so Eve's reasoning is not from spiritual. Her reasoning is from sensuous. Now, she doesn't share or state what Jesus states when he's tempted. By the way, on the three same areas, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. All three temptations with Jesus, he responds with the command, objective truth. Remember, the child is told to put the toy up. And if he doesn't, then the author of law comes into the life, say, you can't do this, or you better do this and not do that. You better obey me or else. And then not only is the parent the author, they're the authority. They can physically remove the toy from the child. And if they necessary, they will chasten the child. And in other words, they're saying, if you don't get control of the flesh, I will get control of the flesh. I will inflict pain into your life so that you might learn that it's better to obey God than do whatever you feel like doing. And therein is the very structure of objective truth, truth that is external to your sensuous experiential moment that interferes with the flesh and its desire to relate with the creation. Now, when she shares her opinion, because your opinion today, all of our opinions carry within them our desire to relate with something in the creation. It is sensuous based. Touch, taste, sight, smell, sound are involved in our human, carnal, unregenerated nature. Now, the consequence of her sharing her opinion was that by not quoting the text, as Jesus said, it is written, it is written, it is written, she is now in her domain. In other words, she is seeing the world that God created through her eyes. Karl Marx said, we must have eyes that are human eyes and ears that are human ears. Notice that God stated after Adam and Eve sinned, they have become like us, but having eyes they cannot see and ears they cannot hear. Because God is speaking to us spiritually. Set your mind on things above. Where is that our reasoning, we trust in ourselves. Cursed is the man who trusts in man. Why? Is because if you trust in yourself, all you've got to work with is this dopamine, approach pleasure, and adrenaline and other things, avoid pain. And so all you have a foundation with is the law of the flesh. And the Apostle Paul addresses this. In Romans 7, he talks about a war that goes on within him that we all, by the way, experience. He says, with my mind, I love the law of God. Now, I didn't say with the flesh, because the law of God doesn't come from the flesh. It has to be taught. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. And so somebody has to preach and teach the law, because God's law does not come from the temporal cosmic environment. It has to be presented to us supernatural, above the nature of the creation, above the nature of man. And therein he says, with my mind, I love the law of God. But then he talks about a body of death. He said, who can deliver me from this body of death? Well, he mentioned the law. You would think, well, the law could save him. But all the law does is reveal the law of the flesh. Because he talks about this law of the flesh, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And therein, the law, all the law can do is condemn him. It can't rescue him. He can never fulfill it. And so therein, because God said, okay, you must fulfill the law. And the only way you since you cannot fulfill it, the only way that you can continue relationship with me is to sacrifice a lamb. To have the annual or weekly or whatever festival to sacrifice before God. But when Christ came, see, he is the sacrificial lamb. Without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. And so Jesus, who fulfilled the law, see, the law simply was for Jesus to fulfill. You and I can't fulfill it. It simply means that we're all condemned to judgment. Because God is holy, pure, and righteous, and we are eternal. And if we cannot meet God's standards, when we die, we are in trouble. See, you would be in trouble if you have not repented, if you're not covered by the blood of the Lamb. And Jesus dies, therefore, his righteousness, his fulfillment of the law, is imputed. It's given to you. Now, the only requirement is that you believe upon him. It's called faith. Remember, the Hebrews 11 talks about the faith of Abraham, the faith of Noah, the faith of Moses. Men of faith who believed God. Now, the law was introduced through Moses. But again, all the law can do is reveal the law of the flesh. And as Paul stated, who can deliver me from this body of death? And his answer in the next verse is Jesus Christ. He is my propitiation. Now, I shared that so you might understand that that is not dialectic. Because Jesus said, it is written. He said, "He says, what my Father commands, that's what I do. He who does my Father's will in heaven is my brother, my sister, my mother. So therefore, he presents a patriarchal paradigm. This is the dialectic thesis. He presents a position. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And therein, he finds his position established by God and God's will. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's a patriarchal paradigm. Now, Bloom's taxonomy, every teacher is instructed on Bloom's taxonomy, every certified teacher, Christian as well, recognizes this dialectical process. Bloom writes about it extensively, and you can get on my website, again, authorityresearch.com. The last article I've published is entitled Concerning Bloom's Taxonomy. It is very involved explaining where we're going. All of our education today, the workplace, directly the result of education, government, even the church, a result of the system, the curriculum that's used in education. Whoever uses a curriculum method in the classroom develops the paradigm, how the next generation will think. And so therefore, whoever controls the curriculum controls how the next workplace will be, how the government will be, how church will be. And my concern is that we have abandoned a patriarchal paradigm because we have introduced into our culture officially. Now, it's always been here on an individual basis. You can think about disobeying your parents, but there's always this fear of getting caught. And so without some encouragement, you won't do it. Well, Bloom's taxonomy was all about creating an environment in the classroom so the next generation can feel free of the guilt of disobedience and free from the threat of chastening, or actually considered if the parent does chasten, that the parent is hateful and the parent needs counseling and should not have any more children, shouldn't be in a position of influence. And we certainly see that attitude prevalent everywhere we look today. It's a result of the dialectical process because we have rejected a patriarchal paradigm, a top-down, I'm from above. See, God says contrast, I'm from above, you're from below. Good, evil, right, wrong, above, below, well, I've said that, heaven, hell, sheep, goats. And so from the Word of God, we understand a objective truth. Now, what the dialectic does, it goes to antithesis. And that's where we live in, because we have spirit and we have flesh. But to the humanists, all they see is the flesh. They see somebody who is interfering what is natural to man. It is natural for the child to want to play with a toy for the sake of dopamine. So if you take the toy away, you must introduce something else into that child's life that would satisfy the dopamine. And so today, that's called dialogue. Today you see parents trying to explain to a three-year-old why they shouldn't be doing something. And so the child can't understand it. So that's objective truth. Therefore, what the parent does is try to bring something the child can understand into their life experience so their dopamine won't be cut off. Now, God in Hebrews 13 reveals through his word that God chastens those he loves. And what that means is he produces an environment which inhibits or interferes with our love of the creation. Remember the toy the child's in love with. He's not in love with the toy, he's in love with the dopamine, but the environment, something in the environment is stimulated. So he's now in love with whatever it is that stimulates pleasure. Therefore, he's a lover of pleasure rather than God. Especially, see, when God comes in and says, you can't have it. Now, God said Adam and Eve could eat of all the trees, but he said, this one, you can't have it. And so the moment Satan creates an, and through dialogue, this is all dialogue. This ministers get upset with what I'm sharing because they say, well, we have to dialogue. And they go, no, it's preach and teach. If truth is from above, all you can do is preach and teach it. Because the flesh cannot comprehend it. The darkness cannot comprehend the light. It is spiritual. But the ministers today, out of church growth, emergent church, are all about dialogue, which means dialogue means something that we all can find in common. So every person on the face of the earth, through dialogue, has to, for the sake of consensus with the sensuous, be able to experience whatever it is you're talking about. Therefore, if we're talking about something that's going to produce pleasure or hope in happiness and happiness and pleasure and pleasures in the mind and that we know is dopamine that the environment stimulates, so our hope is found in the creation. You see that? That's cyclical. That's the dialectical process. And so every social engineer filters. Child protective services, they're all filtering all the information coming into them, into their experience, through that cycle. And if you happen to interfere with that cycle, then that's neurosis. You're negative, you're divisive and hateful, intolerant, prejudiced, maladjusted. Now, this spells real persecution for the believer. Because the believer is going to be like an obedient Adam, an obedient Eve. When Satan comes along and says, you know, yes, God said, thou shalt not eat of every tree in the garden, Eve should have said, God has said. But instead she said, quoted exactly what God said. You know, Dad says, as Jesus did, it is written. But instead, she shares her opinion of what God said. Now, your opinion carries within it, I ought to be able to touch the tree. I ought to be able to do this. It carries within it resentment towards anything that interferes with your desire to receive pleasure from the environment that stimulated the pleasure. And so by that sequence of events that we find in the garden, we find Hegel's dialectic, very same procedure. Eve then responds with this, for God has said, thou shalt not eat of it, nor touch it. Nor touch it, there's the ought, there's the sensuous, lest ye die. And by that, there comes the fear of judgment. Now when God told Adam and Eve, you know, Adam, if you eat of it, you're going to die. I don't know if they understood what death was. I doubt it, but it didn't sound good. And so therein is the conscience or the fear of consequence. Now, a famous writer of the 60s, Norman O. Brown, he wrote one of the two Bibles of the 60s for the liberals. Now, probably never heard of it. You may not have. But if you're a liberal today, it's still good reading to understand what happened in the 60s and the 70s. He writes, by dialectical, now that's the synthesis of the dialect. We've talked about the antithesis. That's I'm from above, you're from below. Right, wrong, black, white. And it has to deal with relationship. Now, your desire to relate with something in the world that God has said, no, you cannot, that produces a cognitive dissonance in your life if whatever it is in the environment stimulates dopamine. Because part of you wants to believe in God, but that's objective truth, that's above. But you're subjective. And so whatever it is in the environment that produces this pleasure, you're looking into the environment to keep relationship with it because you like the pleasure. And so the role of a facilitator is the same role that Satan produced before Eve, was to put her into this cognitive dissonance situation so she could then evaluate for herself what is right and wrong. And negate God's right and wrong. But her right and wrong is based upon the creation and not the creator. And so therein lies the synthesis of the dialectic. Because what she found with the tree of knowledge of good and evil was common. Remember, God is contrast? But all of communism, globalism, socialism is finding what we have in common. And we get back to Hegel's A plus negative A equals A. Well, how can you get an A, a 1, and a negative 1 to come back to a 1? Because they're opposites. Well, you find what they have in common. They're both numbers. Now, that sounds really corny, but there are dire consequences to that. Herbert Marcuse said, and he quotes, and I think it's Hegel, he says, we must find purposiveness without purpose and lawfulness without law. And I read this stuff over and over. What in the world does that mean? Lawfulness without law simply means we want to have the feeling that we're under law when we're not. We want to have a feeling of purpose when we really don't know what our purpose is. Because if somebody gives you law, then you're stuck. It's objective truth. It's above you. And it's going to interfere with whatever you feel like doing today. But if we can have a feeling of law, that's the ness, lawfulness. Or we can have a feeling of purpose. We really don't know what our purpose is because somebody didn't come in and tell us what we're going to do, what our purpose is. Now, God does. But to the humanist, what Eve is doing is humanism. It's scientific. She's leaning to her own understanding into the creation to find truth. We are to trust in the Lord with all our heart, but she's trusting in herself. And self, by the way, always loves pleasure. It's always going to approach pleasure. And therein, the mind, remember Paul says, with my mind I love the law of God. That's going to interfere with the law. That's going to expose the law of the flesh. And therein, you can never find satisfaction within the creation. See, God said, I have not given you peace as the world gives you peace. See, the world gives you peace based upon the dopamine, the pleasure. And so man puts his hope in the creation. Now, there's a trick to Immanuel Kant's critique of pure reason. And all these social engineers look at that, because that's the hope that comes from happiness, and happiness from pleasure, and pleasure from the mind, and mind from the dopamine, and the dopamine is stimulated by the environment. So our hope, therefore, is in the environment. If we can create a healthy environment, heard about healthy schools and healthy communities and healthy churches? If we can create a healthy environment, then the goodness of man will manifest itself. And what is the goodness of man? It's Eve looking at the tree. She's good, therefore. Because she's saying the tree is good for food, pleasing the eyes, desires to make one wise. Good, good, good. She is now good. But God said, once they sinned, no, you're not good. And so therefore, through our own understanding, we always justify that we're good. That's why when you talk to people today, you preach and teach to them. You know, you speak with a voice of authority. They can't handle it. Because they perceive that they're good. I'm okay, you're okay. And they don't understand when Jesus took the child and set the child before him, says you must humble yourself as a child and be converted. Converted from what? From your evilness. But the first act is you must accept me and my word. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. It's interesting, when you humble yourself, you quit the dialogue. You accept his word as is, and you believe upon him. See, anybody who practices the dialectic process cannot have faith in God. Now, they can have faithfulness. Remember the trickery? Faithfulness is a feeling of faith, but they don't have faith. They can quote scripture, but they don't mean it. They can talk about dying to themselves, but it's all a con game. You know, consensus means you better sense a con coming on. And the con is building reality on your feelings. And see, true science has to be observable, repeatable. So Eve's looking at the tree, and it's observable. Good for food, pleasing eyes, desires to make one wise. And by the way, it's repeatable. Because Adam and Eve didn't die because of the tree. Physically, materialistically, the tree didn't kill them. See, God removed them from the tree of life. And why did God remove them from the tree of life? That's where they died. God said, if you eat of this tree, tree of knowledge of good and evil, you're going to die. But God removed them from the tree of life. That's why they died. It's because they changed their paradigm. They changed from a paradigm of above, below, right, wrong, sheep, goats, heaven, hell. See? To a paradigm of common. They moved from contrast, which is didactic thinking, deductive reasoning. In other words, you start with a premise. You present a truth, you use syllogism, therefore, as the Apostle Paul did, and then you come up with your outcome, how you should respond to a given situation, and your response must not move anywhere away from the premise. Therefore, when God said, thou shalt not, or it is written, you don't move away from that. Now, if you do move away from it, it's because you followed the law of the flesh. And you didn't turn to the law of God. There we find that we're not God. Because, see, they look, you'll become like God. God said they become like us, but they haven't become God. It's all deception. They think they're God. They think they can evaluate for themselves right and wrong. Look at our government today. They're leaning to their own understanding, create their own illusion, and everybody pays the price. Because they have the force. They put themselves, like Jesus said to the scribes and Pharisees, you put yourself in Moses' seat. Why? Because they love the dopamine. They love the accolades of men. They love the praise of men. And that's dopamine. And that's the pride of life. And he said, by the way, you hated Moses. If you'd loved Moses, you'd realize you're wicked and you'd be looking for me who could redeem you from the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience because of your disobedience to God's law. Now, the consequence in the garden was they died. They died because they disobeyed God. That is a patriarchal paradigm. Now, Marx understood this. Marx says, once the earthly family is discovered to be the secret of the heavenly family, the former must be annihilated, both in theory and in practice. Now, what he's meaning by that is that once you realize that the parent interferes with a child's natural inclination, remember, the environment stimulates dopamine, gets into the brain, the child loves it, looks in the environment, what stimulated dopamine, I want more, and that's a cycle, the environment self cycle. And the parent comes in and interferes with that. And Marx understood that. And how the parent interferes with that is chastening. Chastening produces a peaceful fruit of righteousness. See, God chastens those he loves because he gets you off of the dopamine. God sent Moses to get the children of Israel out of Egypt, out of dopamine land. He forsook the pleasures of Egypt to suffer with the children of Israel in the wilderness. Suffer. Isn't that what you do when God chastens you? It's grievous for a season, but it produces a peaceful fruit of righteousness. Other words, you've got a position. This is right and that is not. Now, you can't go to globalism with that. You can't have the village mentality with that. See, it takes the village to raise a child. In essence, it takes the village to rescue the child. We will leave no child behind. From the parent. From the traditional home. And all children are at risk. Why? Because they're under the influence. Actually, not influence. They're being inculcated. They're under learning principles of right and wrong and black and white and sheep and goats. Principle-based. That they can proclaim the truth and hold to truth and expose evil. And by the way, tyrants can't rule with a people like that. Tyranny cannot prevail with a people that are principle-based. Now, man is not good. Only God is good. So I do speak about authority, but all authority is of God. So we are under his authority. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Desire of the heart of the wife is to her husband in the Lord. See, not to herself nor to her children, because then the husband can't rule. The rule of the husband is to rule under God. The wife cannot go to the husband and say, I hold you accountable for, you know, your bad behavior, because she would be usurping the office. And that certainly is what's taught today. There's equality, you know, partnership. No, it's top down. Every person in the family, it's top down. That is hated. That system is hated by Satan. It is hated by the by the social engineers, by the dialectical thinking people. Now, Norman O'Brown, he says, by dialectical, I mean an activity of consciousness struggling to circumvent the limitations imposed by the formal logical law of contradiction. Now, he's simply building on what Marx said. Once the earthly family that chastens their children. Now, chastening is important. Because chastening teaches you that there's right and wrong. Bloom's taxonomy, page 32, the first book, Cognitive Domain, says, we recognize the point of view that truth and knowledge is only relative. He paraphrased Karl Marx, who says, in the eyes of the dialectical philosophy, nothing is established for all times. Nothing is absolute or sacred. And so we now live in postmodernism, which means no standards. We are now a culture that has rejected a patriarchal, deductive reasoning paradigm. And we have embraced the very paradigm, the dialectical paradigm, that Satan got Eve to praxis in the garden. She had a sensuous need. What was that? A sensuous need. Every time she's going by the forbidden tree, dopamine's being released because the environment stimulated it. But it gets into her mind, and she's looking at a tree, and then there's this fear of God. I can't touch it. I can't, you know, can't eat of it, so I definitely, you know, the perception is I can't touch it. And then Satan said, by the way, you won't die. And you'll be like God. You know, for God does know the day you eat thereof, you'll be like him. That is a powerful environment change there, because what he did was, that's class consciousness. That's conscientization. In other words, you make the person aware of what the parent is about and what you're about. In other words, you elevate the child to the level of the parent so that they can think for themselves about what's right and wrong. And that is powerful, because what that does is that humanizes the child. It therefore, they are free to use their mind to think for themselves. Paul says, with my mind I love the law of God. He's not thinking for himself. Jesus said, he who does my Father's will in heaven. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. See, that's negated. It's annihilated in conscientization. Now, Paulo Freire, big name, folks. You better prepare for this, because he is from Latin America. He died a few years ago, but he is popular talk today in our education. Our new director of education, under our current government from the federal level, is built on this structure. Our education system is built on Freire. And he says, any interference with that child going into the environment, trying to evaluate from the environment what it is that stimulated this pleasure, that interferes with that child's natural inclination to find out for himself his identity with the creation, must be treated as a criminal act. Now that's Marxism, because Marx said once the earthly family is discovered to be the secret of the heavenly family, once God who chastens his children is found in the home, the parents who chasten their children, he says the traditional home, the parent that intercepts that child going to whatever it is into the environment to stimulate the pleasure and say, no, you cannot do that. That behavior is a criminal act, and it has to be annihilated. That's a powerful word. That's what all the health care, do you realize the health care now actually deals with, this is the verbiage, it deals with anything that has a physiological effect in your body? We're talking about fruit, we're talking about water, we're actually talking about, because the World Health Organization doesn't only deal with physical, it does with mental and social health, because the social environment affects your physiological body. And so, according to the dialectical reasoning, if the parent interferes with that child's natural inclination to identify with Mother Earth, Gaia, and the cosmic forces, that parent is committing a criminal act. And therein, this is the right of the child. This is the foundation of the right of the child. It wouldn't exist without this foundation. And so what Satan did with Eve in the garden is the very foundation of our government today. The dialectical process. There's the thesis, the position, God's command. There's the antithesis, the desire, the opposing. Satan says, oh, you won't die. God says you will. Satan says you won't. And then the synthesis, Eve finds what's common in the garden and justifies the sensuous experience, the sense experience. Now, so she has a sensuous need, and she's put in a safe environment now, because, oh, you won't die. You know, we can talk about whatever we want to. This Rogerian Psychology Foundation, by the way, for church growth, emergent church, and counseling. Anybody who's trained in counseling uses open-ended. We can talk about anything. Well, you can't. That's all Satan was doing with Eve. We can talk about anything. What do you feel like talking about? Well, you know, that tree over there. Every time I go by it, I have a little anxiety. You know, I want to relate, but something's interfering with the relationship. I have a little tension. And non-directive, which means I'm not going to tell you what's right and wrong. And the very same scenario that Satan with Eve. Discover it for yourself. There is no right or wrong. I'm not going to bring objective truth in your life. You're going to discover it. Objective truth. Truth is a moment. incorrect praxis. It's a moment that is a result of an experience of the moment that ties to the creation, that is normal to the creation. Normal to humanity, human rights, not inalienable rights, because inalienable rights, you notice the government wants to get rid of the inalienable rights. Because you can't have human rights tying man to the environment if you have inalienable rights tying man to a higher authority. Because no man can put a lien on those rights. They didn't come from man. And by the way, they're all self-evident, because God breathed the breath of life into the nostrils of man, he became a living soul. Even Freud recognized that within man there's this desire for an omnipotent authority. We want somebody higher than us to give us direction. It is not in man to direct his steps. God didn't put any microchip in you or me that we can direct our steps. We cannot lean to our own understanding. Eventually, you're going to crash. By the way, that's why they have to recycle. There's always short-term experiments or pilot projects, because long-term, this thing falls apart. And so you got to have crisis after crisis after crisis, meeting after meeting after meeting, and perpetuate the process, because longevity kills it, because eventually everybody wakes up. This is death. It is why God said, you know, you can't do it, Adam. You can't do it, Eve. You can't do it. Because if you do it, you will die. And you'll live in your sin forever. Notice that, what is Abel? Abel's righteous before God. And Cain, you know, why is your countenance fallen? He's sulking. Well, I oughta, shoulda, mighta, coulda. God, you know, you're just not listening to me. He's not obeying God. He's leaning to his own understanding. And then he kills his brother. First murder. Well, you don't think socialism hasn't murdered? It kills its own people, by the way. And what is the criterion? What is the justification for killing your own people, your own citizens? It's because they're not thinking dialectic. Because they're thinking didactic. Should have you a little concerned here, realizing that every teacher in your community, Christian included, is trained to use Bloom's taxonomy, which, is, by the way, it's dialectic, which means it's not successful till no one can escape. We will leave no child behind. And that everybody is guilty until they're proven innocent, which means you have to put everybody under a stressful crisis environment, find out how they're going to respond. Because are they going to turn to a higher authority, as Jesus did in a crisis environment in the wilderness? Or are they going to turn to the group or to the environment for their solution, as Eve did in the garden? And so therein lies the solution for the New World Order, for the Council of Foreign Relations, for the UN, for the socialists, communitization. Commutization, you know, conscientization, democratization. Everything's in motion. And so Norman Brown says, by dialectical, I mean an activity of consciousness, struggling. Because it has to be a struggle. You have to fight against. It's not rebellion, because rebellion is still under authority. You're just kicking and having a tantrum. It's revolution. Revolution means you've struggled to overcome the voice of the parent in the child. See, if I have your child in my classroom and I do this process, like Satan did with Eve in the garden, once she's going, it is good, it is good, it is good, God's law is irrelevant. The parent is irrelevant. God is irrelevant. It's not an issue of he's wrong, he's not wrong, he just is irrelevant, because he doesn't understand, he isn't looking through human eyes, he isn't looking through human ears, and he doesn't make any sense. It's sensuous. That's true science has to be observable, repeatable. Eve's looking at a tree, it's observable, repeatable, so God's not a scientist, he's irrational. This is the mindset of the evolutionists. Because they can't handle the truth, because if they looked at the truth, it would condemn the theory. It would condemn the scientific experiment, the theory. We're going to practice theory. You know, already Marx says, how do you destroy the traditional home? You must annihilate it, both in theory. That's the child's thinking. It's not enough to think disobeying the parents. That's still rebellion. But practice. Theory and practice means you got to do it. And so we find, class consciousness. Oh, above, below. But wait a minute. What do we have in common? I can think. God thinks I can think. And therefore we have in common. So I can think for myself. And if God comes in or the parent comes in, that's why Marx said you have to annihilate the home. And Norman Brown says an activity of consciousness struggling to circumvent, to get around, circumvent
the formal logical law of contradiction. Formal. Right and wrong is formal. Black and white is formal. Above, below is formal. Logical. Logic is if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. It's logical. It works. But you have to study it. It's something that doesn't come from your sensuousness. It just doesn't pop on you. You have to actually work it through. Take a class. Do some thinking. And it comes from the laws that God has set in order. And Martin Luther said, you know, avoid Aristotle's philosophy like a plague. But his logic, it's good. Why? Because he was simply looking at the laws of nature that God had created. And so he said, we got to circumvent this formal, right and wrong. See, the feelings aren't involved in formal. You just better obey. Eve, how do you feel about the tree over there? Oh, I want to touch it. That's all. God didn't say anything about that. He didn't ask her for opinion. Jesus didn't ask anybody for his opinion. God doesn't ask you for your opinion. On the day of judgment, your opinion doesn't count. Why are our ministers today all about opinions? You know, we got a dialogue. That's an opinion. You preach and teach the truth. It's God's position. You know, you can tell a Marxist. Actually, this is a formula for detecting a Marxist around you. And whenever you share the truth of the Word of God, and they say, well, that's just your opinion, Marx said you must treat every truth and ideal as an opinion. And so they can't accept it. If you preach and teach the truth, they'll just say, well, that's your opinion. Well, if it is not God-breathed, it is, by the way. You know, if it's not true science, it is. So you either look at true science. Paul says, by the way, avoid the oppositions of so-called science, so-called knowledge, pseudonomos gnosis. Avoid it, because many will lose their faith. And who lose their faith is those who go in and play the game. Those who go into dialogue. But if you go in and preach and teach and proclaim the truth, as Jesus said, it is written, it is written, it is written, doesn't matter how I feel, doesn't matter what I think. You're going to become a witness for the truth. The Greek word for witness is martyrius. They're going to martyr you. This is the persecution of believers. They didn't kill Christians in the Soviet system. They killed believers. They don't kill Christians in communist China. They kill believers. See, this is why that trusting in the Lord with all your heart, because your heart is deceitful above all things. Eve was deceived because she leaned to her heart. That's your feelings. Your sensuous need to relate. The caring part of you. But see, in our nature is, what can I get out of this relationship for me? That was church growth. Peter Drucker, he was a globalist. He worked on nonprofit organization. Why do people work for nothing? Voluntarism. Look at the whole church growth movement. Emergent church is all in voluntarism. You get the groups together and you go out and care for people. And it's all, that's good. It's good. It is. I mean, socially, civically, it's good to go out and feed people who are hungry. Clothe them when they're naked. Give them what they need. But see, the real intent with this process is when you give somebody a child, say the family doesn't have toys for the children, you give those children some toys and you see them playing with it, you're getting dopamine. Now, if the child would simply throw the toy away, you'd say, well, forget you, I'm not going to do this anymore. But you always have to make sure everything's done in a group, and therefore it becomes social. See, and it moves it away from right and wrong. Right and wrong becomes relative to the situation. It becomes situational. And that's dialectical, because it's the environment that now stimulates what's right and wrong. And so as long as you're producing dopamine for the group approval, you come in, by the way, with contrast. You're all wrong and I'm right. Oh, boy, you know, you're now negative, divisive, hateful, intolerant. And by the way, that doesn't produce dopamine in anybody who's doing it to you or you. Maybe they're getting dopamine. You know, maybe they're sadists. You know, they take pleasure. They get to that point. Actually, you can inflict pain on others and get pleasure out of it. Now, they would say, well, that's what you're doing. No, man does that, but not God. God doesn't get pleasure in man's suffering. Why do nations reap what they reap what they sow? Is because they reject God. They reject his authority. Now, a lot of people would say, well, Christians, look at all the criminal activity the Christians have done around the world. No, no, don't blame God for that. That is man lusting after things in the environment. You know what Jesus say with a rich young ruler? You know, take all that you have and give it to the poor. Come follow me. Deny yourself, see. There's no dopamine there, denying yourself, because self says, hey, I want that. Something in the environment I want, you know, God says, no, cut it off. He's not against you having food. It's not, you know, man doesn't live by bread alone. He's for you to have food. But what? By every word which proceeds from the mouth of God. That's above you. The food is here. It's human. And Kant did the trick. He said he distinguished above, below, and he changed it to, you know, that's what these guys did. Excuse me. These social engineers, they changed above, below to human, non-human. That's what the dialectic does. It changes everything relative to sensuous experience. So experience becomes the foundation for whether anything's right or wrong. Well, this is very lethal, folks, because once we go as a culture, and we've pretty much gone this way, you can't undo it. God always has to judge from outside. This stuff is so strong. Our feelings, when they become the foundation, imagination of the heart, lean into your feelings. Not only is the heart deceitful, you're never deceived because somebody lied to you, you're deceived because you liked them, because you trusted them. So you have a whole nation, a majority of this nation, maybe not a majority, but enough to make a difference, have followed their feelings and leaned to their own understanding, trusted in their heart. See, the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, desperately wicked. Call it the shopping list of iniquity. Well, I've run out of time again. I just close with this. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. Then He's the one who directs your path. That is a patriarchal, didactic, deductive reasoning paradigm. And that's the structure of thought that God desires that we have. It's not holy, but He is. The dialectic process is the very negation of that paradigm. Get on my website, authorityresearch.com. The latest article is concerning Bloom's taxonomy that our culture has certainly gone into. It is a lethal, diabolical process. I call these books that every teacher is trained in, secularized Satanism, intellectualized witchcraft, and that's the abomination that we find happening all around our nation and around the world today.